Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. I'm Jonathan Friedman, and our next guest in the studio is Dr. Donna Brzezinski of Little Sparrows Technologies. Welcome, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
It's wonderful to have you on Radio Entrepreneurs, and you've brought with you a little sample of the product. Is that the actual product, or is that a sample that travels with you?
Okay, so that is one of the actual products. It's one of our advanced prototypes. It will be representative of what finally reaches the market once we transfer the design to manufacturing for mass production.
So let's talk a little bit about what the device is, and a very fascinating field. You're a neonatologist. And so you work with preemies predominantly?
Preemies, sick newborns, yeah.
Okay.
Hospitalized newborns.
And so you saw obviously a need within the neonatology field and sick babies, and the numbers are staggering, as you told me.
Yeah, that's right. So neonatal jaundice is extremely common. About 60% of all babies have some degree of it. More common than preemies, about 80 or 85% of preemies have it. And of those, one out of every 10 has severe enough jaundice to require treatment. The best treatment for jaundice is a non-invasive one. It's exposing as much skin as possible to very intense blue light, and that's known as phototherapy. And usually, certainly for most term babies, a couple days under continuous therapy, phototherapy, continuous blue light phototherapy, completely cures jaundice. It's very non-invasive, very safe, and certainly very understandable. So we have a low risk, high reward treatment for a disease that cures nearly all cases.
And what is the current framework for treatment? What is currently available, and where do you see the market need? You're a true startup entrepreneur,
taking
the concept and developing it from scratch.
So. Right. So if you have one out of every 10 babies worldwide requiring this therapy, you're looking at numbers globally of 14 million babies that would need therapy.
Annually.
Mm. And it's a problem that's not going to go away. So this has been around forever and will continue to be. In the United States, the birth rate is about 4 million, and so, you know, somewhere between 5 and 10% of those babies are going to need treatment. The current data suggests that more than 40,000 babies have been discharged and then readmitted for treatment of jaundice within the first week of life. Mm. So the babies are born, they usually get discharged on the second day of life with the mom, and then somewhere between day 3 and 5, become jaundiced and are right back in the hospital.
Which always blows my mind as a first-time parent, and sit there and say, 24 hours after you deliver and you're on your own, what am I looking for?
Right, exactly. And certainly for first-time parents, it's an incredibly intimidating and frightening experience. And so to readmit a baby for treatment of jaundice costs about $5,000 or more per readmission. So we're looking at minimally a healthcare dollar cost of $200 million per year to shine a blue light on the skin for a couple of days. But the bigger issue really is what happens to the mother-baby pair. So if the moms and babies go home at 48 hours and then are separated shortly after that, that's a time when mom is bonding and establishing breastfeeding and families are trying to get together to welcome their newborn. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly stressful to the family unit and certainly to the mother-baby pair. So what we'd like to be able to do is actually keep mothers and babies together during this. And most of these babies who've been discharged from the hospital were discharged because they were otherwise well. And so if we can find a way to diagnose and treat jaundice on the outpatient basis, we can accomplish a lot of things. We can certainly keep the moms and babies together, which is our main goal. We can effectively treat jaundice if we had a device that could deliver the same intensity therapy as a hospital. And then we can also deliver the therapy for a lot less money, which should be very appealing to third-party payers and healthcare networks.
So is one of the challenges that the symptoms or the doesn't appear for a number of days, so that 48-hour window is just not enough typically for a physician, but it starts in the liver, and by the time it gets to the skin, it's a longer process, or it takes several days?
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's a good description of the timeline of what happens. So neonatal jaundice is different than adult jaundice. So most of the adults who have jaundice have it because they have something fundamentally wrong with their liver, like a viral infection. In a newborn, the problem isn't so much that there's something wrong with the liver, it's that the liver may not be mature enough to metabolize the pigment that causes jaundice.
Even more so in a preemie
because of their immaturity. And so the baby may be making this pigment called bilirubin at a relatively even normal level. It's just that the liver can't handle it. Or in some circumstances, there's too much of this pigment. So bilirubin is caused, bilirubin is produced by the metabolism of red blood cells. So anything that disrupts red blood cells releases bilirubin as a byproduct. And if the liver cannot clear that, it accumulates in the skin and at high levels in the brain. So what we really worry about are babies who have this imbalance between the amount of bilirubin being produced from red blood cells and the ability of the liver to clear it. So we, certainly in the preemies, we monitor them extremely closely because they're at high risk. But other babies that may be at risk would be babies who have bruising because they have red blood cells that that need to be metabolized, or if there's a mismatch between the mom and baby's blood type, that can also result in an immune response that causes red blood cells to be destroyed more quickly.
So the device is, describe to our listeners a little bit about the device. It's a portable device?
Highly portable, easy setup? Very easy setup. So, if only I could have the listeners viewing this as we speak, but the what we did was incorporate some ideas about optimizing light delivery to make this an incredibly efficient and effective device using as few light elements as possible and using as little electricity as possible. And the idea is to have this be able to be set up pretty much anywhere in the world. So my first inspiration for this was as a global health device, because babies are dying of this on the order of about 100,000 a year from something that's pretty much curable
and treatable
with blue light therapy.
And so, does that require a power source?
It does require a power source, but because this device runs on power that's about the equivalent of running a 20-watt light bulb, it can run on a car battery for a really long time. Mm. So we currently have it piloted in a couple of hospitals in Burundi, in Africa. And it has been able to operate from a car battery for 10 to 12 hours at a time during power outages.
Wow.
So an area that previously had no option for delivering continuous phototherapy has now treated more than 100 babies in this pilot.
Fascinating. So what is the vision for the product in the marketplace? So for example, a baby goes home after 48 hours, develops symptoms of jaundice. I imagine you're not going down to CVS and purchasing the device.
So yeah, in the U.S. market case, no, you wouldn't really need to purchase this. It would be more since you only need it for 2 days. It would be some kind of rental arrangement like other medical equipment would be.
Devices,
right. And I think that's one of the nuts that we have to crack is where is this device going to be stored and then delivered in a timely manner to the home. We do envision the outpatient pediatricians having a really major role in being able to identify these babies early and get them to treatment early. What happens now is that the babies end up being seen by their pediatrician on an outpatient basis. They get referred to a hospital. Hospital does a blood test to check the bilirubin. If the bilirubin level is high, then the baby often will go through the emergency room, waiting for a bed, and then finally get treated. And there can be a fairly long lapse between the time the baby is suspected of needing treatment and actually getting it.
I was going to say, you're probably talking 2 to 3 days, perhaps,
longer. It's not on the order of days, but it's certainly on the order of many hours.
Okay,
Jaundice is progressive, and okay, so you really...
Say, so you slow the progression by getting treatment sooner.
You need to treat as soon as you identify. You really don't want to have these long lapses between identifying a patient for treatment and treating. If we could handle this all on an outpatient basis with the babies who have already been discharged, they can just go home with a device from the pediatrician's office and have a visiting nurse check in on the baby and check the serum bilirubin level in the home and just keep the baby out of the emergency room and out of the hospital. I mean, who wants to have a newborn in the emergency room?
And it would be, it is something that is relatively easy for a layperson to set up and utilize. And
yeah, so
obviously they need some guidance and instructions and training.
They would be trained on how to use the device. We deliberately designed this device to sort of be at the intersection of some common elements in commercial baby products and but still have the features and effectiveness as a medical device, obviously. So if you look at it, the baby is positioned in something that looks very much like a Moses basket, like a little cradle.
As you say, it reminds me of a little pop-up tent you took to the beach when you're
exactly,
your toddler.
That's exactly right. And so, you know, even the unskilled user, someone who's not familiar with jaundice, could look at this and know exactly how the baby's supposed to go in it. And that was, we put a lot of thought into that design to make it as user-friendly as possible for users of a variety of backgrounds and skill levels.
And what have you found, this is your first entrepreneurial venture, you're a physician by training and practicing physician?
Yeah.
And what have you found that some of the challenges that you faced along the process, what has surprised you? I'm sure there are many.
Yeah, there are many. So on the positive end, what has been a really pleasant surprise is the amount of support in the entrepreneurial community there is in the Boston area, and the opportunities there are to be able to grow your company and leverage a lot of the talents and resources in this broad community of entrepreneurs and people who support entrepreneurs in the Boston area. So that has been a wonderful experience. We were part of the Mass Challenge program. Mm-hmm. We were a company that was global finalist in 2013. And we've also been the recipients of entrepreneurship in residence at the Autodesk Build Space, which is another great program for entrepreneurs who are building things. And we, again, we've been very fortunate to be there as well. On the learning end, for someone who's medically trained and not business trained, I think a big lesson is really around transitioning your thinking from product development to market strategy. Most people who are making things, who are entrepreneurs, who are making devices or tools or consumer products, are people who do that because they have a talent for that. That doesn't necessarily mean that they also have a talent for the other stuff, but there are lots of people out there who are incredibly skilled and knowledgeable. And trying to fill in the gaps within your company to build that out as early as possible is something I would recommend. Because ultimately, you can have the best innovation in the world, but if nobody uses it, you haven't really accomplished anything.
Right. And I imagine, given the complex nature of the healthcare landscape in this country, one of the challenges is figuring out just what is the delivery method? How do we get it in the hands of the people that can actually deploy it to the market and do it efficiently and effectively?
Yeah. Right, and the healthcare market in this country is not uniform everywhere, and so the way it would be deployed in different parts of the country certainly would be different, and the needs in different parts of the country are different, and that's something we're exploring right now. And then certainly, you know, looking at the global market, so emerging markets are incredibly segmented, and we're your customer in those markets is going to be distinctly different than the customer here in the U.S. So we may be dealing with NGOs and governments and other and private organizations. So.
Well, it's a fascinating story. Obviously, another great story of entrepreneurship, and we really appreciate you coming on Radio Entrepreneurs and talking about it and seeing the device. And we have some video running where people can see the device. If people want to get in touch with you and learn more about either the product or where you're at, and perhaps something that can help you accelerate the growth and the market penetration. What's the best way for people to reach you?
Best way to reach me is through our website, which is Little Sparrows Technologies, just www.littlesparrowstech.com, and then go right to the contact page, and you'll find a way to reach us, and we'll be happy to answer any questions and give you more information.
Wonderful. As we do with all entrepreneurs, we wish you great success moving forward, and fascinating to see the device, and we hope you come back and share with us as it evolves and get some market traction on your story again.
Okay, thank you so much.
Our guest has been Dr. Donna Brzezinski of Little Sparrows Technology, and you're listening to Radio Entrepreneurs, and we'll be right back with another segment on Radio Entrepreneurs.